Okay, good evening. So our aim for tonight is to start talking about Prizbul a little bit. I think we'll probably do it in two parts. And we mentioned last week and the week before that we're focusing on these in Yanim now because we are coming to the end of the Shemitah year. This is a rare opportunity to focus on these topics. But especially Shemitah's Ksafim, which is just going to become relevant because Shemitah's Ksafim kicks in at the end of the Shemitah year, Miketz, Shavah Shonim. So while Shemitah's Karkos has been relevant the whole year, Shemitah's Ksafim is just coming up as an applicable topic. And it was also the topic in the Parsha this past Shabbos, while we're in this context. So we wanted to try to talk about it now that you've heard it lain this past Shabbos, and to focus specifically on the concept of Prizbul. And I think we'll probably take 2 weeks for that and do it in two parts, because Prizbul is a very misunderstood concept. And we'll try to focus tonight on the philosophy of Prizbul and how exactly it exists in compatibility with the spirit of the law. And this is a companion piece to our discussion of the Het Mechira of the past 2 weeks and to other topics that are sometimes grouped together with Prizbul and Het Mechira. But Prizbul is fundamentally different than Het Mechira and really requires a lot of explanation. First of all, because on the one hand, Prizbul is much more grounded and much more widely accepted than the Het Mechira. It goes back to Hillel HaZaken and the Mishnah, and it's not something that is at all in dispute today, and we'll talk about that a little bit, even though in the time of the Gemara, in the fourth parak of Gittin, where there is a sugya surrounding Prizbul, so there is some objection that is noted, the position of Shmuel. But Lamaisa, Prizbul has endured from the time of the Mishnah till now, and it's not something which at this point is at all controversial within the halacha. However, at the same time, it is also the subject of a lot of misunderstanding, and it creates the impression that, oh, you see, here, Prizbul displays the fact that the rabbis can do whatever they want to deal with a halachic challenge if they are motivated enough. And that just shows that they should be able to solve all problems just if they decide that they care. Because look what happens to Prizbul, that here we have a mitzvah d'araisa to cancel the loans. And just because the rabbis don't want the rich people to have to lose out on their loan repayments, so therefore they instituted Prizbul. So that is objectionable really in every part of the sentence, and that's what we'll try to explain, that that's not the way to understand it, and that actually there is a tremendous depth and layers to how Prizbul is very much not a way of undermining the Torah, and we'll see it is really quite the opposite. So that's a main focus of what we want to try to address tonight, just to try to explain a little bit the philosophy of Prizbul, a little bit how it came about. And God willing, next week maybe we'll focus more on the lumdus and on some of the details. But for now, we'll just suffice to say that Prizbul is a document that is signed at the end of the Shemitah year. And as far as the presence of witnesses, Dayanim, etc., that's something that we'll talk about next time. But essentially, it is a document that is addressed to Beis Din and that has the effect of not canceling the loans. So therefore, the loans are still collectible even after the end of the Shemitah year. So to try to address every part of the misconception mentioned a moment ago, so first of all, the idea that the Prizbul undoes Torah law, so that really needs a lot of explanation. So the Gemara in Maseches Gittin seems to say, at least according to one opinion, that the whole utilization of Prizbul is based on the premise that Shemitah nowadays is Drabbanan. So that's the working premise, it seems to be. It is a machlokas in general about Shemitah's Ksafim and its status today. There is an opinion, Balaiter, that it continues to be Daraisa. Sounds like from the Gemara that it is not, and most assume that Shemitah's Ksafim nowadays is Drabbanan. There is even an opinion in some of the Rishonim, we'll say a little bit more about later, that it's actually not Daraisa or Drabbanan, and it is Amidas Chasidus, and that view is actually quoted in the Ramah. So that's a significant view. So, in any event, what seems to be the case is that, in practice, Shemitah's Ksafim does not represent, nowadays, a mitzvah min HaTorah. And it also seems, I have to speak a little bit ambiguous language, because there are some varieties, some differences of opinion here, but it seems to be the case that the Gemara is both assuming that Shemitah's Ksafim is Drabbanan, and that is crucial to Prizbul being used. Now, what exactly is the nature of how it's so crucial? So this is a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ravid, and a few other Rishonim as well, that the Rambam maintains that Prizbul only works at all because Shemitah is Drabbanan today. While the Ravid disagrees, and he says that that works out according to one of the opinions in the Gemara there in Gittin, but he assumes that according to the other opinion, that's Rava against Abaye, Prizbul works because of Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. That the Bezdin has the authority to reassign property and therefore reassign money. So that, says the Ravid, that should be effective even on a level min HaTorah. If that's what's happening, if that's the mechanism, so that should not be limited only to Dinim Drabbanan. So it's a whole discussion in the Achronim why the Rambam does not work off that premise, but here's how we seem to have a machlokas, the Rambam maintaining that it only works because Shemitah is Drabbanan, while the Ravid, it sounds like it could work even for Shemitah Daraisa, but therefore the connection to it being Drabbanan seems to mean that we use it because it's Drabbanan, that Hillel advocates it because of it being a Din Drabbanan. So that itself touches upon an issue we spoke a little bit about last week and we spoke about in the past, the question of Haramos, and the issue that if you're evading Torah law, and when do you accept that, when do you not accept that? So we saw that there is a major trend among some of the Achronim that there's a big difference whether we're talking about Dinim Daraisa or Dinim Darabanan. Are we talking about Torah law? Are we talking about rabbinic law? And that when it comes to Torah law, we're much more hesitant or we don't allow using any kind of an evasion. So it could be that that's what the Ravid is getting at, that even though Prizbul could have been effective, even if it was a Din min HaTorah, but we would not have advocated using it. And Hillel would not have spread this concept of Prizbul if it was undermining Shemitah min HaTorah. While the Rambam seems to be saying more than that, that it only works because Shemitah is Drabbanan. Tosfos has a comment over there in Gittin that, along the lines of the Ravid, that really there were other ways also, and we'll come back to this point too, that there are other ways that Shemitah's Ksafim can be impeded, other techniques that could have been used to stop Shemitah's Ksafim, but we wouldn't have advocated using them had Shemitah's Ksafim been a Din min HaTorah. So again, that seems to be the position that they're working off of, that we wouldn't have encouraged the usage of any of these techniques, whether it's Prizbul or other techniques, if Shemitah was Daraisa. So that's... Yes.
In regard to Shemitah.
Yes. So that has a huge...
That's going with the notion that maybe it's in Daraisa, so which leads to a separate question of why you need Prizbul, but we see that from that Gemara already that it works.
Okay, so that's going to be a crucial question. So we will discuss, you'll see that plays a major, major role in the discussion. The presence, the existence of that Tanai is a very important aspect that the Rishonim discuss, that the Achronim discuss, and that has implications all over the place. So Bez Hashem, we'll come back to that in a few minutes. That the Gemara is highly significant. So separate from that point, which we'll come back to, so how exactly Prozbul works in light of these concepts that existed beforehand, so some of the Rishonim assume that indeed that's the case, that there are other utilizations that could work for stopping Shemitah's Ksafim from taking place, such as Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker, and that the Prozbul simply activates those strategies. Another one is the concept, which one really sounds very similar to Prozbul, is the idea of Moser Shtaros of Lebezdin, the idea that you can turn your contracts, your chovos, over to Bezdin, and that also allows the chovos to be collected after Shemitah. So maybe that's how Prozbul works. So that was actually a Machlokas Rishonim. Rashi and a number of other Rishonim understood that that's the case, that Prozbul is a tool of being Moser Shtarofus to Bezdin. But Tosfos, over there in Makkos and elsewhere, notes that the Mishnah lists the two concepts as if they're two different things. Moser Shtaros of Lebezdin and Prozbul, it sounds like they are two different things. And therefore, it doesn't sound like that's what Prozbul is. The Ritva, in his commentary to Makkos, he suggests that when Rashi says that it is Moser Shtaros of Lebezdin, that when Hillel came and instituted Prozbul, it was an extension of this concept of Moser Shtarosov, so that the individual doesn't have to do it himself. This was something that then became a part of Prozbul, and it utilized that technique. And others understood that it's not one or the other. It's not Hefker Bezdin Hefker, it's not Moser Shtarosov Lebezdin, but it is a new technique. Hillel set up something new that carried out this result of allowing the loans to be collected afterwards. Some of the Achronim note that part of the language of the Prozbul is Mosrani Lachem. We say we're turning over to Bezdin something, so it sounds like it is Moser Shtaros of Lebezdin. So Rav Asher Weiss, in his Sefer on Gittin, so he writes, working off of the Rambam, that it doesn't mean that you are handing over your Shtaros, like the Mishnah talks about, but it means it's a mesiras moda, that you're making a declaration in front of the Bezdin that you plan to collect the chov afterwards, and that's why you have this kind of overlapping language, but it is a different idea. Okay, so a lot more to say about that. Again, Be'ez Hashem will come back to that idea of how it works. Maybe that's something we'll come back to next week. That's just a very brief introduction to some of the possibilities. So that was writing the question here, what was Hillel's contribution if this was an existing idea? So some of the Rishonim understand he didn't actually do anything new. He just advocated utilizing an existing strategy, so he was mefarsim that idea. And others understand, like the Ritva, that he took this concept and formalized it so that people didn't have to do it on their own. So instead of individuals thinking or not thinking of being Moser Shtarosehem to Bezdin, so they would sign a Prozbul instead, and that would have the effect. But it was just utilizing that pre-existing tool. So as far as how it works, that was a major machlokas among Rishonim, Achronim. Either it took something that was already in existence, publicized it, expanded it, or it was a new innovation. So, in any event, so as far as addressing whether this is undermining Torah law, so it seems pretty clear that this is not a matter of Torah law, b'zman hazeh, or at least that's how most assume, and that therefore Prozbul works because of that fact, or would have worked anyway, but is utilized because of that fact. But one way or the other, it's connected strongly to the idea that there is no Shemitah's Ksafim Daraisa b'zman hazeh. So this is not about undermining Torah law. And also, even more significantly, so the assumption that's sometimes made that this is to get around Torah law in order to help the Ashirim so that they shouldn't lose out on getting their repayment, so that also is not correct. that this is done for the purpose of the poor, not for the purpose of the rich. And the Gemara identifies that specifically as the motive, that this is a reflection of the concern you find throughout Shas in many different contexts. It's something that comes up a lot, that we're very concerned, shlotinol delas bifnei lovin, that we don't want it to be the situation that people need to borrow money and they're not going to find anyone willing to lend them. So therefore, because Hillel saw that was happening, that's what the Gemara says, that he saw that shenimnu shirim lahalvos, he saw that the aniyim were not getting loans, so therefore he enacted prizbul in order to make sure that they would still have loans available. Now it's true that the Gemara does have two different opinions as to where the word prizbul comes from, which seems to be a Greek word. But what exactly is it etymology? So the Gemara discusses it could mean either pros buli or pros buti. And pros buli would mean a ordinance on behalf of the wealthy, as opposed to pros buti, which means on behalf of the poor. So the fact that we use the word pros bol seems to favor that first opinion, that it is a ordinance on behalf of the wealthy, and as Rashi does say over there, so that they shouldn't lose out on the money they loaned, or the money that they loaned out. However, even with that formulation, it's still clear that this is really on behalf of the poor, because if we were really just worried about the rich not losing out, so then they could just choose not to loan in the first place. But we want to make sure that they will loan, and we don't want them to have any even subconscious hesitation to do so. So in order that the loan should still be available, which wouldn't happen if we were afraid that the aniyim are going to be too hesitant, so therefore they made this enactment so that the aniyim could get their loans. And it's interesting, this is also expressed by the Ramban. We mentioned before that there is a view in the Rishonim that Shemitah's Ksafim is not even Midrabanan, but it's Amidus Chasidus. And the Ramban argues on that. The Ramban thought that it was active as a Chiyuv. And the Ramban says, against this position of the Balamor and the Miri, that it's only Amidus Chasidus. So the Ramban says, what Midus Chasidus is there in being Noel Delos Bifnei Lovin? If we're going to get in the way of the needy being able to acquire loans, that's not any kind of Amidus Chasidus. So that's an interesting consideration to try to understand, because especially if you say it's Amidus Chasidus, it sounds like everyone could choose whether they want to do this or not. So if we're really just worried about the rich people not wanting to lend, so they could decide, okay, I'm not going to observe Shemitah's Ksafim because I'm not obligated to anyway. It's all Amidus Chasidus. So it sounds like we're so concerned about conscious and subconscious impediments that perhaps even if it was something that was totally voluntary, but there's a social pressure to take this step and to cancel the loans, so that'll already be enough for the rich people to say, I'm not getting involved in this, I'm not going to lend any money. So we're so afraid of that, so we say, even as Amidus Chasidus, it's not a good idea, and we should keep the loans going. And that's one of the points that the Prizbul is addressed to. So with that, and to try to understand the spirit of the law here, so it's important to appreciate that the mitzvah of halva, the mitzvah of lending money to those in need, is one of the primary examples in the Torah and in the Gemara of chesed. So if I asked you to give me examples of chesed, you'd probably come up with a lot of other examples, hachnasas orchim, and bikur cholim, and yichum aveilim. You may not think first about lending money, but in the Torah and in the Gemara, it's one of the main examples. And it gets a lot of real estate. And by which I mean, not only does there exist many words about this, but also as far as counting mitzvos. So there's a whole cluster of mitzvos around the idea of lending money. We have a few times in the Torah this notion that we should be ready to help those who are faltering economically and lend to them. So that itself is a mitzvah. The pasuk im kasef talvas echicha medrash tells us im is not an optional idea. It reflects that you should, you must in this usage, and that you have to provide loans. But beyond that, so there are all these other mitzvos that come to support it. So we know we have the very strict prohibition of ribbis, that we're not allowed to take interest on the loans. That appears a number of times in the Torah. And we have a prohibition of pressure. We're not allowed to create any kind of unpleasantness for the people who have borrowed and haven't paid back yet. We can't pressure them. And we have this obligation of amnesty every 7 years, this concept of Shemitas Ksafim. So all of those mitzvos are supporting mitzvos. The primary mitzvah here is the lending itself, and that's so important. So we also have all these additional mitzvos to make sure that the concept of helping people through loans is strengthened. However, being that they are supporting mitzvos, so we can understand that we certainly wouldn't want the supporting mitzvah to undermine the main mitzvah that it's there to help. So if the possibility of loans being canceled is going to stop the loans from happening in the first place, and especially if that's not even a din min haTorah b'zman hazeh anyway, so we can certainly understand how that would become counterproductive. And we know, we read this past week in the Parsha, in Parshas Re'eh, this whole mitzvah of Shemitas Ksafim, and shortly after that, the Torah says, Hishomer, you should be very careful, this old prohibition, that you shouldn't have a machshava that's blial, you shouldn't have a thought that is evil, so to speak. That word blial, a very strong term that conveys a person having no sense of responsibility. And it happens to be the Torah actually uses that same word earlier in Parshas Re'eh to indicate Avodah Zarah and Mesis Mediach, that it's a very serious connotation. And the Gemara in Bava Basra says that you see that somebody who doesn't want to help out with staka is comparable to an Ovid Avodah Zarah. So here the Torah is telling us that the concern that somebody is going to say, Karva Shnas HaShava, Shnas HaShmita, that's going to happen, that it's almost Shemitah time, and I'm going to lose out on my loan, so therefore I'm not going to lend. So that, the Torah says explicitly, is a terrible attitude. That's an attitude that is called Blial. So we're very concerned, the Chumash itself is very concerned, that there is going to be this refusal to lend, and that, what the Gemara says, is what Hillel picked up on, Shanimnu Ha'amil Ha'alvos, he saw that people were not lending, and therefore he enacted Prizbul for that purpose. Now, together with that, so considering all these parts together, that the Torah itself is telling us to worry about this, don't let the fear of loan cancellation get in the way of loans. And if we're assuming especially that the loan cancellation itself is not a chi of daraisa b'zman hazeh, so there are a couple of other parts that we could put together. So one part is what Yaakov wrote up before. So what about the fact that the Gemara in the beginning of Makos says that it is possible to make a tenai, you can make a stipulation when you lend money, that Shemitah should not cancel. So if that's the case, so then who needs Prizbul? Why don't we just have everybody make these tenayim, make these stipulations, and that will also have the same effect. So the lenders will still provide money because they can collect afterwards because they'll make a tenai that Shemitah should not cancel, as Rebecca was bringing up. So a lot of Rishonim discuss this, the Ramban, and the Ritva, and other Rishonim, and their commentaries both to Makos over there and to Gittin, where the other Gemara appears. So in both places, the Rishonim take up this question, and they have a whole bunch of answers. So among the answers is that we're afraid that the Malva will forget that's a possibility, and so again, he'll hesitate to lend because he'll forget that there is this route to preserve his loan to come back to him. Also, the Rishonim say that maybe the lender doesn't want to bring up this possibility that he's miyayish on getting the money back before Shemitah is over. So he doesn't want to even have it lasting that long. So he doesn't want to bring up the whole concept that Shemitah may get in the way and potentially cancel it. Or some say maybe it's a bizayin to Shemitah to make a tenai against Shemitah. The tenai works because, as the Rishonim explain, that this is a tnai sheba mamon, it's a monetary condition which should be chal, but still it seems like it is a disgrace to Shemitah. But the most significant point that the Rishonim bring up here is that having the prizbul, instead of just having a tnai to keep Shemitah out of the way, but having a prizbul instead, that keeps alive the memory of Shemitah. And that's going to be a crucial concept here. The whole notion of Shemitah Derabanan in general is Shlo Tishtakach Torah Shvius, that we don't want Shvius to be forgotten. So the Rishonim invoked that concept that prizbul is much more effective for that goal than having one of these other message, one of these other methods, such as just making a tanai. And the Rishonim also point out that if they did use a tanai, so that's something that is private and nobody's going to know about, while the prizbul involves a bezdin, so that's also a pirsum, that's also going to bring up publicity to the notion of Shemitah, and that's a big part of what we want to accomplish. So those are some of the approaches that the Rishonim have to the question of why don't we use a tanai instead of prizbul. In the Achronim, they go a little bit further. So the Bechor Shor, we mentioned the Bechor Shor in previous weeks, because the Bechor Shor was the one who doesn't like Haramas by Dinei Torah in general, and he makes that comment in the context of Mechiras Chametz. So here, the Bechor Shor has a comment in Maseches Makos, where he writes that he has a chiddush in how to understand this isser of Hishamer, this concern that you're going to violate a lav if you refuse to loan because of Shvius. So the Bechor Shor says that if you have this tanai, that's not necessarily going to save you from the lav of Blial. And that's partially because to have the tanai, you're going to need the consent of the lender and the borrower. So if the borrower says, I'm not going to agree to this tanai, so then the lender may say, okay, well then I'm not going to get involved anyway. And in that case, you're still going to violate this lav of being a blial. So if we want to make sure to protect the lenders for their sake from violating the isser of blial, so then we have to provide the prizbul because that doesn't need the consent of the borrower. The Chasam Sofer has a tshuva where he makes reference to this Bechor Shor, but he doesn't tell you that he's actually going even further than this. And he understands the big chiddush. He says that even if the lender does lend the money, but he does so only with the tanai, so he would still be in violation of this isser of blial. So according to them, you for sure need the prizbul as a much more effective tool in order not just to provide the loan to the recipient, that's important, but we also want to save the lender from the isser of blial, so we'll need the prizbul and the tanai is not going to be enough. Now, it's relevant to understand here also that there does seem to be a machlokas as to the scope of the isser of blial. This idea of hishamer, you shouldn't be a blial. So what does that refer to? So there happens to be a view in the Rishonim, like Rabbeinu Yonah writes in Shari Tshuva, that it's a reference to any time somebody refuses to lend for less than justifiable reasons. So the way Rabbeinu Yonah understands it is that the Torah is saying, don't hold back from lending money because of whatever excuses. And it mentions Shemitah because that's a case where you might think, okay, here's a good excuse. And you can see from there, kal vachomer to any other case where your excuses are less solid, where you have only flimsy excuses, of course you would violate this lav. So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the lav in general is about refusing to lend money without a good reason, in general, in any context. While other Rishonim, such as the implication of the Rambam in Mishneh Torah, in Hilchos Shemitah V'Yovel, and it's also the way the Lacha Mishnah understands him, in his comments to the very beginning of Hilchos Malveh V'Loveh, sounds like their opinion is no, that this is specifically about Shemitah. So if you turn down a loan at some other time for some other flimsy excuse, so you're not in violation of Blial. It's specifically about not following through with Shemitah or not allowing Shemitah to cancel a loan because you're not going to make the loan in the first place, or not being willing to take on that possibility, which is a fascinating idea. The Lecha Mishnah understands in that comment over there in the beginning of Hilchos Malva Lova that the nature seems to be essentially a ben adam lamakom, then, that basically it's about insulting God, that you don't want to carry out the Shemitah's Ksafim process with a loan and then the possibility of it being canceled. That's the nature of the Isser. That's the nature of Hishomer. And there is a discussion in the Achronim, the Hisarius Tshuva has a Tshuva about this, where he talks about the question of the Bracha of Shemitah. And we spoke about this in the context of the Het Mechira. So we mentioned then that there were some who objected to the Het Mechira, and they said, what's this whole big discovery that Shemitah is hard and that we have to somehow get around it? The Torah already said that Shemitah is going to be hard, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a promise that he's going to provide enough extra produce in the sixth year that'll take care of it. So then what's the justification to avoid observing Shemitah's Karkos? So we mentioned, I think at the time, that many, such as Rav Svengel and others, they responded to that by saying that the bracha of extra produce for Shemitah, that is only applicable when Shemitah is min HaTorah. So then you could say, okay, God commands us to observe Shemitah, and he says, I promise I'll take care of you. But if there's no Shemitah min HaTorah, so then how do you know the bracha is there? Rav Svengel said that that's being somech al hanes, to assume that there's a bracha without an actual mitzvah. So the Hisarius Tshuva, in two of his tshuvas, he talks about this, and he assumes that this is true for each Shemitah's Ksafim also, that he works off the position of the Sma, it's one of the most prominent views that the Bracha doesn't apply when Shemitah is Drabanan, and he says it's the same idea here, that this would have applied to both Shemitah's Karkos and Shemitah's Ksafim if there was a Bracha. So then basically what the Torah is saying is don't hold back and refuse to give a loan because of Shemitah. That's because there's a Bracha that you're not going to lose out because of that. So if you say, well, I don't trust the Bracha, so it's really an Avera ben Adam Lamakom, you're insulting God, saying you don't have Amunah in that promise. But if we assume that the promise is only connected to the promise is only connected to Shemitah D'Araisa, so then that very much changes the whole context here. In fact, the ancestor of the Hisarius Tshuva was the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, in his Chedushim Tegitin, so he writes that because of the Pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, right after the Pasuk of Bli'al, the Torah says, Ki b'gal hadavar hazeh yivarechach Hashem alokecha, that God will bless you because of this. He says that's a haftacha that comes together with Shemitah's Ksafim Daraisa. So the Isser is contingent on that, that you shouldn't hold back, because there's a bracha that God is promising you, because you're observing Shemitah's Ksafim Daraisa. But if it isn't, so then you don't have this bracha. So then you don't necessarily have this security. And we still certainly have the mitzvah of halva. So it seems that if the idea is that Prizbul is designed to make sure that the needy get the loans, and also to save the lender from violating Hishomer, he shouldn't be a Blial, so then it's addressing a couple of things at once. It's addressing the fact that you shouldn't hold back from giving loans when people need it, and we have to make sure the loans happen. And perhaps also that this question of the special bracha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in connection with Shemitah, which we're not sure if it is still in effect when Shemitah's Ksafim is not Daraisa. So now to put all this together, so it's also noteworthy that a number of the Rishonim discuss the fact that in the medieval era, in the time of the Rishonim, it seemed that Shemitah's Ksafim specifically, had just completely fallen into neglect, and the people were not canceling their loans, nor were they writing Prizbul. There was just no awareness at all of Shemitah's Ksafim. They weren't doing either part of it. Rabbi Shlomo Brody just published an article about this in Tradition, where he goes through the whole history and different theories of why that happened and why it changed Bizman Azad, now that Prizbul has come back. But in any event, so this is what the Rishonim discuss, a bunch of the Rishonim discuss, that in their time, there just was no observance of Shemitah's Kzafim. They weren't canceling the loans, nor were they writing the Prizbul. So the Ramah quotes the view that maybe they were relying on the possibility that Shemitah's Kzafim is not a Chiyuv, not Darais or Darabanan, and therefore that's why they weren't observing it, nor bothering to write a Prizbul, because they just don't have to worry about Shemitah's Kzafim at all. Maybe that was the attitude. Others got a little more worried about it, so the Rush in his Chuvas, and the Ksos discusses this Rush, the Rush in his Chuvas writes that we know that a Tanai works, so maybe it's as if there was a Tanai baked in, since everyone knows nobody's canceling loans, so therefore it's Ki'ilu, there was a spoken Tanai, that Shemitah should not cancel, this loan should not be canceled by Shemitah. So even though no one thought to say anything, but maybe it was basically implicit that this Tanai was being made. So neither of those is so inspiring. And Yonasan Eibschitz, in his comments over there in the Tumim on Samach Zayin in Choshen Mishpat, where this comes up, so the Tumim there writes that he doesn't like these approaches, and he has a beautiful drasha there. He has a whole speech, which is very kedai to read, where he says that it's very important to have the Prizbul, because the Prizbul is a zecher l'shvius, is something that helps keep alive the memory of shvius. And he says, to just assume that there's a tnai, or to say that it doesn't apply, he says, even if you accept the opinion that Shemitah's Kesafim is not a chiyuv today at all, and he doesn't ultimately accept that position, but he says, even Lamanda Amar, even if you accept that position, that Shemitah's Kesafim is not a chiyuv at all, he says, you still would have to have a Zecher L'Shvius. And he has a whole beautiful drasha there, where he notes that the Navi Yirmiyahu says, it's Tzivilach Tzionim, that we have to make road marks to know how to get back to Tzion. So he says, what greater area is there to commemorate if we want to make sure that we can end the Gullus, we can go back to Tzion? So the mitzvah of Shemitah, in both of its halves, in Shemitah's Kzafim and Shemitah's Karkos, is a expression of the Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people, and the belief in that Hashgacha. And you see, God makes a promise that he's going to take care of us, even if we cancel the loans and we don't work the land. And we believe in that promise, and we show our great faith, and we see with our eyes how it plays out. What an amazing reflection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha over the Jewish people when they are not in Galus. So if we're trying to make commemorations as road signs to know how to go back to Eretz Yisrael to end the Galus, so what more important concept is there to commemorate than Shemitah? So for sure, the notion of a Zecher L'Shvius is crucial. He writes there that if a secular philosopher would suggest to you that this is a good concept to try to build in some practice to commemorate, you for sure do it. So all the more so, given that he thinks it actually is a chi of Shemitah's Kesafim Darabanan. So all the more so, we should for sure have a Zecher L'Shvius, and that's what the Prizbul is. So the Prizbul is there to accomplish this Zecher L'Shvius, while also not impacting on the availability of loans for those who need it. So it accomplishes both. We have this idea of Zecher L'Shvius, and also make sure that the needy are able to going to get their loans. Now, if we just wanted to make sure that the loans would be available, so the rabbis could have just insisted on Tanayim, or they could have made a Tanay on behalf of everybody, maybe, like the Rishonim were suggesting was implicit. So the rabbis could have enacted that. They could have said, Lev Bezdin Masnaleim. We sometimes have a concept that we make a Tanay on behalf of the Tzibur, and we wouldn't even have to rely on everybody coming up with this on their own. But if that was the case, yes, you would protect the availability of loans for the poor, but you'd have no Zecher of Shvius. People wouldn't be aware at all of the whole concept of Shvius. So therefore, what did they do? They created the Prizbul, and the Prizbul is basically the same thing as canceling the loans through a Tanai, except it's an opt-in process, that in order to activate this cancellation, so you have to fill out the form, you have to fill out the Prusbul, and that forces you to engage with Shvius on some level. So there's going to be some commemoration of Shvius, the memory of Shvius is going to be kept alive while still providing the loans to those who need them. Now, you might say, okay, but if I'm a tzaddik, there's still a better way, perhaps, to keep the memory of Shemitah alive. Is it at all, kedai, is the chumrah, not to use a prizbul? And maybe you should say, okay, so those people who aren't so generous, they'll use the prizbul to make sure they keep lending. But maybe I'm a tzaddik, I shouldn't use a prizbul, and that will allow me to actually carry out Shemitah's k'safim. So the Sarris Tshuva has a tshuva about that, and he thinks it's not even an inyan at all. There's no inyan to avoid using the prosbul, that the purpose here is really the din d'rabbanan of shlot tishtakech tarif shvius, and therefore that's accomplished with the prosbul, and there's no need to be machmir to avoid using it. In the Ben Ish Chai, so he discusses something a little bit less, says that maybe there should be a idea that you write a prosbul, but after you write the prizbul, make one small loan and don't cancel that. So it's like you sell all your chametz, but you leave a little bit to be burnt. So leave a little loan outside of the prizbul so that you can be mekayim shmitas k'safim in that. So the Ben Ish Chai says that that's something he thinks is a good idea and that he did that himself. But it hasn't caught on. And in the Tshuvas Yashiv Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Shmuel Shechter, I think is the most prolific author of Tshuvas today. So he just came out with Chelek Nun of his Tshuvas, volume 50. So in the 50th volume of his Tshuvas, so he has a Tshuva about this, and he writes, this just hasn't been the practice, it doesn't seem to be something that anyone thinks is necessary, even to leave out one loan for the purpose of doing Shemitah on that, and that just using the prosbul straight out is not any kind of a bidyabed, it's totally fine, and there's no need to avoid that. So I think in the context of what we've seen, we see that indeed the prosbul is very far from a tool to avoid the Torah's mitzvos to protect the rich. It's really very different than that. It's not dealing with a din d'oraisa, and it's there to protect the poor. And on top of that, it's there to protect the value min haTorah. It's focused on what the main value is, the mitzvah of halva. That's our main consideration. And the Torah itself expressed this concern that we don't want to let that be undermined by Shemitah, even when it's d'oraisa, but all the more so when Shemitah is not d'oraisa and it's a zecher l'shvius. So the prizbul allows us to make sure that the needy get the loan and that the zecher l'shvius is still fulfilled. So it's, I think, ironic that people see the prizbul in such a different way. But just to add to the irony before we wrap it up, so Rav Herzog in his writings, Rav Herzog has a lot to say about Takanos and about the Prizbul, and he discussed in his writings, why is it that being that there were many other techniques that could be used in order to stop the cancellation of loans, so why did they have to bother, why did Hill have to bother with Prizbul? So he has a different approach. He says that had they utilized any of the other techniques, Hefker, Bezdin Hefker, whatever it is, then people would not have appreciated what was going on. The masses in general would not have been aware of the whole mechanism of Shvius and what's the Reis and what's the Rabbanan and how it works. So had the rabbis just relied on these other techniques, people would have thought, okay, the rabbis could do whatever they want in order to get around the Torah. So in order to stop people from thinking that, that's why the Prizbul was created. So according to that, it's especially ironic that the Prizbul itself has been understood as such a tool to let the rabbis do whatever they wanted. So Rav Herzog's perspective is that was the whole reason the Prizbul was created. People shouldn't think that. They should see that there is a need still to formally engage with Shvius and have a zecher l'Shvius, and that was why the principle itself was created, so people shouldn't get the misimpression that the Torah law could just be ignored or dealt with without actually engaging with it and with its purpose. So hopefully that gives us a little bit of appreciation of what the principle accomplished. As far as the mechanics and the lumdus of how it works and some of the unusual details that come along with the principle, so Be'ez Hashem, we'll try to discuss that next week. So I wish everyone a wonderful night, a wonderful week, a wonderful Elul, and the last month of the Shviyah cycle. We should use this month of preparation for Rosh Hashanah and closing out Shviyah as a time of inspiration that we should always connect to both the dinim of the Torah and the values of the Torah and find a way to make sure that they are all in harmony with our practice. Okay, you should have a great night.